A woman dreamer I know, quite a frequent flyer, enters a conscious dream in the middle of the night and decides, great, I'll fly. She enjoys flying. So she flies out the window, is aware of leaving her body behind on the bed, and has a moment of lack of creative imagination or something like that, because she decides, well, what will I do next? I guess I'll go to the mall. Now it's, 4 o'clock in the morning. She's flying around in dream travel, and she decides to go to the shopping mall. So she's in the shopping mall, and everything is closed down for the night. The stores aren't even lit, so she can't even do good window shopping. The place is as silent as a morgue, in fact, more silent than most morgues at 4 o'clock in the morning. The only person who seems to be awake and astir is the security guard who's sitting there, and he doesn't notice her, and when she speaks to him, he can't hear her. So she comes back to her room thinking, I wish I had thought of something more interesting to do with this ability of dream travel. Now, this might sound like an extreme scenario, but there are, curiously enough, many active dreamers or frequent flyers who somehow have developed the ability to enter a dream journey, to get beyond their physical limits, but have barely begun to awaken to the tremendous, actually inexhaustible, scope for exploration and adventure that is out there. So I want, in this session, to talk to those of you who are in process of chalking up some frequent flyer miles as active dreamers about some flight paths you might consider following. These will range from having fun and games with a partner in a dream location, taking that vacation you forgot to take in waking life because you were too busy and too scheduled, to journeying to the Sirius star system, following navigational instructions I will offer to you to check out the belief of indigenous peoples ranging from the Maoris of New Zealand to the Dogon of West Africa that human life was seeded from the Sirius star system, that we are the dust in our bodies of that distant star system and a supernova that occurred there a long ways ago. I hope this will be fun. It is fundamentally about having fun. On one of my book tours, I was asked by a left brain type, bottom line it for me, Bob. What is all this about? Well, my name is not Bob, but I go with the flow, and I say to him, it's about fun. Remember to play. And the left brain type is writing down, remember to play. I said, excuse me, I don't think you have the message. It's not about scheduling an hour for play on Friday morning. It's remember to play. So this session is a reminder to play, and some suggestions about wonderful fun you can have. Developing your ability as a dream traveler. Let's start with a story that might speak to many of you, particularly if you are under pressure at work and don't have enough time to yourself and sometimes miss that vacation. A dreamer I know, very hard worker, under many business pressures, kept postponing year after year a vacation she had promised herself in the Caribbean. And I chastised her mildly about her failure to take a little time for herself and go and have fun in the sun. She called me one morning and said, Robert, I did it. I've just been to St. John's, and I had the most wonderful 2 weeks. I can still smell the fish broiling on the barbecue. Oh, the feel of the sun on my skin, the sand between my toes, that great guy who was there with me. She was really lively, and I felt thrilled, but something was out of kilter. I'd seen her the week before, and she's talking about 2 weeks in St. John, and then suddenly I get it. She is describing a dream adventure from the night before, from which she has brought back the memories of 2 weeks of wonderful romantic fun in the sun, all the sensory experience and vitality and joy of this dream adventure. And you know, she has those memories. She really enjoyed herself. She feels refreshed and revitalized, and she hasn't spent $3,000, and she hasn't had to wait for her bags at the airport. This is fun. What is interesting about that story is that there is a pendant story. There's a little sequel to the dream episode I've told you about, the hard-working woman finally getting to take her vacation in her dream. After she told me this story, a couple of years after, she finally did make the trip to St. John, and this time she is traveling with her new husband. And this time, when she is eating the fish on the literal barbecue, the splendid guy in the background is her new mate, her new partner. So, it became dream fulfillment on the physical level as well. She took her 2 week vacation in physical reality a couple of years after the dream. Isn't that great? Will you ever say to another person in your dreams, in the way they say it in New York City, will you ever say only a dream? When you have had experiences like this? I don't think so. So why shouldn't you plan a dream vacation? Why shouldn't you go and explore some part of the world and have fun and games? You can do that with a partner if you like. You can decide to go on a shared adventure in dreaming. If it's someone who lives with you or is close to you, you can get into bed together and lie in bed lightly touching and go on your dream journey together. Well, we'll go to Nepal this year. Or we'll go to the Virgin Islands and go there together, have some experiences together, swim with the dolphins, hike those mountain trails, share experiences when you come back. You've already heard about how to travel through the dream gate. You've already heard some suggestions on shared dreaming. All you need for this, the two of you, is a physical image of where you would like to go. Maybe it's a restaurant on the left bank in Paris. It might be nice if you had a matchbook or a postcard or a picture of the Eiffel Tower or something to orient you. Visual image. Try it out. Why not? Now, in your dream wanderings, conscious or spontaneous, you are likely to find yourself in many different types of reality. I learned a lot about this from a dreamer in one of my workshops, who found herself in a conscious dream journey going to Venice, a city that she loves, which she had visited many years before. But she noticed in her dream that the Venice she was visiting was amazingly clean. I mean, almost Orlando Disney World clean. No smells, no stink of rotting garbage or sewage in the old canal system. No trash on the streets, no derelicts. I mean, the place seemed, you know, just too tame and cute and non-smelly to be entirely believable. And she notices inside her conscious dream of Venice that there is a tricksterish figure, a sort of Pulcinello type done up in motley, an enigmatic guide with a tricksterish quality to him. And she turns to him and says, "What's going on here?" And he says, "Well, what's your problem? Don't you like this Venice?" And she says, "It doesn't seem quite real." He says, "Ah, you are in a counterpart Venice. Would you like to see the real Venice in your terms?" Oh, sure. She's suddenly transported, or transposed, slipping between dimensions, into a Venice that is now very much like the physical Venice and may be the physical Venice. She smells the rotting garbage, she smells the sewage, she sees the derelicts, she sees a mugging going on in the back street, a tourist's pocketbook being grabbed, and she says to him, "I changed my mind. I think I like the counterpart Venice better. Could we go back there?" Interesting teaching in this story. You know, our dreams do relate to our external lives, and in dreams, conscious dreams or spontaneous sleep dreams, we do see things sometimes very accurately that relate to the outer world. But most often in dreams in which we seem to be dealing with the outer world, we are dealing with a counterpart reality that closely resembles physical reality, but is not, once you get habituated to it, exactly the same. It follows the general lines and contours and laws of form and rules of linear sequence of ordinary reality, but things are a bit different. You'll get to recognize the difference. The difference between counterpart reality, as visited in dreams and shamanic journeys, and physical reality, is like the difference between your dream body and your physical body. In your dream body, the vehicle in which you travel in many dreams, you have a body, you can experience pleasure and pain, you have bodily form, you enter other places in embodied form, but it's not actually your physical body, although people who are not aware of the existence of the dream body confuse their understanding of what goes on. I think a lot of alien encounter and alien abduction stories result from this kind of confusion. It's not to say that alien encounters and alien abductions do not go on. What I'm trying to say here is that because we have not been taught in our culture to recognize the reality of the subtle vehicles of consciousness, if people have a shocking or thrilling or hyper-vivid, hyper-sensory experience, which they know to be real, they imagine that they must have had this experience in their physical body because it's real. It must be in their physical body. So I must have been transported in my physical body to that spaceship and had sex with that woman from another planet because it all seems to be so real. It must be my body. I must have been transported physically on board a spaceship. In fact, many of these stories, when you look at them closely, reflect out-of-body experiences in which the experiencer is traveling in a vehicle beyond the physical. Stories like, I was floating or lifted or carried out of my place of sleep, out of my parked automobile, out of my house, and transported somehow, I'm not quite sure how, into a bubble hanging over the ocean, into a sphere of some kind. And then I felt this pain or this pleasure. Well, you feel all those things in your dream body. You feel all those things in your dream body, and it is real on its own level. Something that we need to understand. Back to the definition of the separate orders of reality. In different spiritual traditions, in different schools of philosophy, you will find different names, different terms applied to the rich geography of the many levels of reality that lie between the physical plane and the higher spiritual planes that transcend human conceptions of form. If you want to follow a scientific way of describing these things, which is not necessarily as scientific at its core as its terms might suggest, you might want to talk about these things in terms of different dimensions. We live physically in three dimensions. Time is generally called our fourth dimension in those old Twilight Zone programs on TV. We were told you are entering the fifth dimension, so you might want to think of many of these adventures as being things entered into in the fifth dimension, or perhaps at other levels of even remoter dimensions of reality, which are sometimes therefore very hard to translate back into conceptions familiar to our regular bodies and brains, which live in 3D. You know, when you think about it, our whole lives, everything about us, is completely open to the sight of an inhabitant of a higher dimension. There's a wonderful teaching story about this, a fantasy written by Edwin Abbott called Flatland, which you may have read or may have heard about, in which he described the shock horror of a two-dimensional being called A Square, a being who lives in his square way in just two dimensions, at his encounter with a 3D being, a sphere who first appears to him as a circle, and whose strange, anomalous appearances and disappearances, materializations and dematerializations as he moves through a higher dimension, fill the A Square character with shrinking dread and terror, and he has to brave up to master his panic at this encounter with a higher dimension. So you can follow a multidimensional description of these things. I merely suggest that now as something that we should all think about and begin to work with in terms of recognizing and redelineating and redescribing some of our own experiences. But let's go back to the older terms used in the spiritual and mystical traditions to account for the different kinds of reality you might encounter in conscious dreams or visionary episodes between the physical plane and those higher spiritual planes that escape human definitions of form. I love the term that the medieval Persian philosophers like Sohrawardin Avicenna and the Kabbalists coined to describe these realms, particularly the use of the term the imaginal realm, or Alam al-Mital in Arabic, the Arabic of Sohrawardi and his successors. You know, we've learnt to say it's just my imagination, just as we've learnt to say it's only a dream. Creative spirits and mystical voyagers know better. William Blake, who was both a mystical voyager and a great creative spirit, told us about that imagination creates worlds. Reason can only describe them. Imagination creates worlds. On the many levels of the astral plane, in those many worlds accessible to dreaming that conform in some way to human conceptions of form, imagination in its most creative form is richly at work. In dreaming, in conscious dreaming, we can encounter whole environments, cities, palaces, temples, schools, wallows and red light districts also in the plains of the astral slums that have been created by human thought, desire and intention and are real on their own order of reality. When you travel to these places dreaming, either in your night dreams or in a conscious dream journey, you will encounter many characters who are native inhabitants of these realms, and many other people who are transients, who are coming or going, maybe staying there for some time, maybe just passing through in a particular dream journey as you are. Many people who have died live on these astral planes for considerable periods after their death. I was fascinated by the experience of a dream voyager in one of my workshops who, when asked to visit a transit area in the afterlife, found herself in a city in the imaginal world, largely populated by people who had died to their physical bodies but were still living in their dream bodies or astral bodies and would live there doing their various things until they were ready to leave the dream body behind and go on either to a higher plane or to another physical life experience. We can find counterparts for a dream traveler's report like that in the mystical and spiritual traditions. The interesting thing, once again, is that you are fully equipped to check these things out for yourself. You don't have to take it on trust. You can indulge your left brain skeptic by suspending your belief, but also, I hope, suspending your disbelief until you have made a first-hand voyage of your own to check it out for yourself. So people who have died to their physical bodies are often long-term inhabitants of the astral realms. I think not permanent inhabitants, but are sometimes there for quite long periods. These realms are inhabited by other beings that have never had physical life and will perhaps never appear on the earth plane. You go to spiritual sources, you go to the Puranas from India, for example, and you'll find descriptions of up to 400,000 orders of beings, humanoid in appearance, and closely connected to, at least accessible to, human life, who inhabit other planes of reality, which can be accessed in various ways, by travel in spaceship-like vehicles that may or may not be physical in nature, by travel into the heart of the earth, into one of the cave heavens in which you go down to the earth and come out among the stars. Up to 400,000 species of beings, other than human but humanoid in appearance, who may inhabit the realms not very far distant from human life on the earth plane. What a rich geography that suggests. Another old term for these realms of reality beyond the physical, but not that far distant from us, is the other world. You come across that word in fairy tales and folk stories, in Celtic mythology, Norse mythology, the other world. The other world actually begins at the limit of the known world. It's not necessarily very far from you. It's a wonderful fairy story from Old Britain, of a man who befriends the fairies, and a fairy woman decides to invite him into the fairy realm. The doorway is a normally invisible opening in the side of a hollow hill. She leads him to the previously unseen door in the hollow hill, and when he steps through it, not far from the place where he lives, he is confused. He can't make sense of anything. Everything seems scrambled and incomprehensible. She drops a drop of a magic dew on his eyelid, and when she changes his sight, he can begin to make sense of things. He can see, and he has a wonderful time in the fairy realm. When it's time for him to return, she puts another drop of the magic dew or the magic brew on his eyelid so that he can once again readjust to the sensory impression of a more limited kind of life on the earth realm and step back from the other world into this world. There's a teaching here which is actually, in a simple folk story, quite complex, quite rich, quite entertaining, quite instructive. The teaching is, once again, the other world is not distant. It's quite close at hand. It's the limit of your known world, which might be no further from you than the tip of your nose, or even closer. The other thing is that in order to step into these other dimensions of the real, you need to learn to change your sight and your hearing. Developing the practice of conscious dreaming is a very good way in expanding your range of sensory impressions, your ways of seeing and being, in order to access and recognize other dimensions of the real. You know, this question of the distance between us and the other world, the imaginal realm, the homes of the spirits, is addressed in a haunting phrase by the Seneca prophet Handsome Lake. Handsome Lake said, "The gulf that separates the living and the dead is exactly as wide as the edge of a maple leaf." That is the width of this great dimension that separates you from the other world, from the realm of the spirits. Exactly as wide as the edge of a maple leaf. And in fact, vivid and gripping though that phrase is, perhaps the dimension is not even that wide, perhaps it's even thinner than that. Because the truth of the matter might be that you are floating in your life within a vast ocean of multidimensional reality, which enfolds you and encloses you and surrounds you at every point, bobbing about in the midst of this, so that you are inside it. It's not separate from you. It's just that you haven't yet perhaps fully begun to recognize its intimate relationship with you, and that you are contained within the higher dimensions of reality. So that really, although the shamanic model is one of journeying out of yourself, at the end of the day the journey might turn out to be an inner journey. The way in is the way out. The way forward is the way back. The way up is the way down. We're going to explore these things, which give you a headache if you spend too long trying to figure them out in a cerebral way, through the power of story and the power of experience. I want to share two things with you in the rest of this session that might give you the ability to see into things that it is somewhat difficult to explain, but not quite as difficult to experience. I want to share with you some navigational instructions for making a dream journey to another star system. The star system is that known as Sirius. If you look in the night sky for the belt of Orion, the great hunter who stalks the northern skies, particularly most visible during winter time, you will notice that the three stars in the belt of Orion, the hunter, point towards the blue star of Sirius. It is the belief, the traditional teaching, of a number of indigenous peoples that life on Earth was seeded from an explosion, from a seed star in this star system, whose light, of course, has traveled for inconceivable amounts of time before it reaches the eye of our telescopes. The Dogon of Mali in West Africa have traditions about Sirius and the fact that life was seeded from there, that the Nomo, the curious, shape-shifting ancestor figures, came from Sirius to this plane of reality. And indeed, in the Dogon tradition, the description of the orbit of the stars within the Sirius system, their relationship with each other, the very existence of the white dwarf Sirius B at the heart of the system, unknown to our radio telescopes before 1970, has proven to be so precise in the view of Western astronomers that it astonishes them. How could they know these things unless either they had received visits from beings who inhabit that space or that plane of reality and remembered what they had been taught in some particularly pristine and accurate fashion, or unless, as Dogon tradition also insists, amongst the shaman kings of the Dogon, one or more had somehow developed the ability to make the return journey to the Sirius star system and report on how things are. That is what their own stories suggest. Not only that visitors came to them from this distant star system, but that one of their great shaman priests, shaman kings actually, was able to make the return voyage. Interesting. Even more interesting, that similar legends and traditions exist amongst many other indigenous peoples. Go amongst the Maoris of New Zealand and you'll find the same story. You find it amongst the Pueblo of the Southwest. You find it perhaps in the singular importance assigned to Sirius in the religion and religious practice of ancient Egypt. What is the journey on the boat of Ra? What is the journey to the sun behind the sun? The Egyptologists among you will have your own theories about these things, but it is possible that the Egyptian preparation for the afterlife in the form of preparation to travel on the boat of Ra was a spiritual practice designed to make the soul journey to the seed plane of life in the sun beyond the sun in the Sirius star system. So I want to share with you a visualization which was given to me in one of my dialogues with a higher source of knowledge that I perceive to be not alien from myself, but larger and more gifted and more knowing than I could possibly hope to be in my little everyday mind and personality. This visualization is intended to give you instructions for making a soul journey, a dream journey, to this distant star system of Sirius, to investigate for yourself the possibility of interdimensional travel, the possibility that inner and outer space are connected, and the possibility that, as in the belief of the Dogon and the Maoris, human life was seeded from the system. I want to take you through this carefully, give it to you in graphic detail, and leave it with you as something you can choose to experiment with or not, according to your sense of adventure, what turns you on, your spirit, your courage. What a daring enterprise. Might sound reckless or simply impossible. But there's a visualization technique I have used to take groups of active dreamers on a journey to a possible Sirius star system. For some of them, what they have found has been a fairly literal seeming analog of a star system in outer space. Far more interesting for others has been the discovery of another dimension of the real, perhaps of that sun behind the sun, as the Egyptians referred to Sirius. I'm going to offer you the visualization. You might or might not want to apply it to your own interest in exploring the stories of the Sirius star system and the seed star, the white dwarf, at its heart. You can, in fact, use this visualization of an orb or sphere you can use as your own vehicle for interdimensional travel for any course you choose to set. So let me offer it to you in that open spirit. I'm going to offer you a visualization that will give you the image, the possibility of travel in an interdimensional vehicle. Once inside it, you will set your own course if you decide to follow this possible path of exploration. You begin with a picture. Picture this in your mind. Let it become wholly vivid and real to you. You are looking at an orb, a sphere within a doorway. It is composed of opaque, fine material. Its color is blue-gray. Above and beyond it, you see the midnight sky of outer space sprinkled with stars. Stretch your consciousness to touch the orb. You feel its gentle resistance. It stretches like a membrane. Adjust your density and let yourself flow inside the sphere. It encloses and protects you. This will be your vessel for the journey. Once you enter the sphere, you have the impression around you of controls. They're unusual controls, like concentric rings of light. You may have the impression of other beings, in holographic form, perhaps, not with the same density. The controls are not panels or switchboards, but patterns of light that form designs slightly reminiscent of Greek mosaics. Settle yourself comfortably inside the sphere. The navigational guidance system is activated by your power of intention. Use it as you choose. So this is the beginning of the voyage. This orb or this sphere is your vessel for travel beyond ordinary conceptions of what is possible, for travel through inner into outer space or through outer into inner space. You'll form your own conclusions about the relationship between them. Here are some more thoughts about this process. The conditions for interdimensional journeys are quite different from linear journeys. You may have the sense of implosion, of becoming inconceivably small, or of journeying through a pinhole at your own center. All the worlds may be explored within the sphere you have entered. The mystery name for this orb means the heart of voyaging. Take your place inside it, take your place where there is no place. Set your course for a star system in outer space that is within. This is how the voyage begins. So here you have it, an orb or sphere, the heart of voyaging. It is called, in one mystery tradition, try it out. Perhaps it's not all that different From the Argo, the ship in which the legendary Argonauts made their voyage to the land of the Golden Fleece, or to the Egyptian Boat of Ra, or to other vehicles in which parties of voyagers, before or after physical death, have travelled beyond the stars. See where it takes you. One of the questions that will not go away as you follow this path of adventure is, what is an inner experience and what is an outer experience? You have the sense, which you have learnt to validate perhaps by now, of journeying beyond your body. The experience of journeying to distant places, perhaps even the experience of journeying to outer space. But our very conceptions of inner and outer space, our clear-cut distinctions about reality, become very crumbly. They don't hold as you embark upon further and further journeys of exploration. I'd like to read you a passage from one of my novels. The novel is called The Interpreter, which describes a journey of initiation. The initiation is of a young Iroquois female shaman, an adolescent who is about to become a woman of power and a rendezvous of her people. She first appeared to me in my own dreams. I honored these encounters in fiction, which describes her life and her practice. The journey is reminiscent of accounts of mystery initiations in many countries, many traditions, of the initiation of the cave of Trophonius in ancient Greece, or in the bowels of the volcano of Mount Etna in Sicily, in which the initiate journeys into the heart of the earth and comes out amongst the stars. There are Vedic stories of the cave heavens, in which you enter the earth and come out amongst the stars and somehow travel to other dimensions of the real. I'd like to share this passage with you. It comes fresh from my own dreaming, and it involves an experience in dreaming of what it truly means to become an interdimensional traveler. And then I will comment a little bit on what you might discover about the connection between inner and outer space. The name of my dream shaman is Island Woman, she who comes from the island. The name of the secret order of women to which she belongs is the Burden Straps. The Burden Straps are those simple straps or cords placed around the forehead by which a Native American woman will support the cradle board in which she carries her child, or a sack she's carrying on her back. It's a humble name used for a very powerful order of healers, which came to me again in dreaming. So I'm simply going to share this passage from my novel, The Interpreter, with you, as a means perhaps to help you find your own paths to explore the relationship between inner and outer space. Island Woman was smudged from head to heel with the smoke of sage and white cedar and bathed in a fast-flowing stream. Under a crescent moon, she was escorted by two of the Burden Straps to the first of her tests. On a high ledge, above a limestone gorge, she was sent to walk naked between the violent rush of a waterfall and the cliff face behind it. She slipped on the shelf of rock. Between the hard spray and the rock face, she could not breathe. She felt as though her lungs would burst. She was tempted to stick her head out through the spray, though she knew the force of the cascade would thrust her down into the green-black river at the foot of the gorge. She found a pocket of air and gratefully drank from it. She felt her breath move beyond her lungs, down through her belly, filling and renewing her. It felt like being reborn. For a moment she thought she saw the face of her birth mother, fatigued but triumphant, as she clutched her newborn to her heart. The Burden Straps wrapped her in a clean shift, blindfolded her, and made her run with them along looping trails until she lost all sense of direction. When she was unwrapped, she found herself standing at the edge of a hole in the ground, a passage of unknown depth only a few inches wider than the span of her shoulders. The way up is the way down. She no longer recognized the woman who spoke. The Burden Strap wore a mask unlike the false faces of the men. The eyepieces were huge and yellow, the nose curved like the beak of an owl. A shower of white feathers flew over her shoulders. Island Woman tried to master her fear. The woman with the face of a snowy owl handed her the small corn cakes that smelled of honey. For the guardians of the threshold. Island Woman accepted the offerings, unsure what she was supposed to do with them. The girl jumped at the first stir of the rattle. One of the burden straps was shaking a small turtle rattle. Noting Island Woman's moment of fear, she twisted her body into a sinuous snake dance. "It is not too late to turn back," she hissed. "But once you enter the tunnel, you cannot return by the way you entered. You must face and endure everything that confronts you, or your body will rest forever in the womb of the mother." "I am ready." Island Woman made the promise to herself more than her wards. She lowered herself into the hole. Her heels found shallow steps. She began to gain confidence. Then her heels slithered off smooth, damp walls, and she went falling and spinning into the void. She landed with a thump that rattled her bones in a breathing dark. She could not see her hand in front of her face when she tried to check it for injuries. The silver light of the moon was gone. She could no longer find sky above her. She felt she was not alone. Her fall had stirred something in the black depths of the tunnel, something that moved in its coils to seek the intruder. She longed for her cat's eyes, for the eyes of the panther who had come to her in childhood. When she found them, she saw, in her own light, what was searching for her. Its scales rippled over a body thicker than her legs. She threw the sweet cakes to it. "I am here by right," she asserted. With her panther eyes, she found an escape. A low passage, no higher or wider than a woodchuck's hole, opened at the base of the tunnel. When she tried to squeeze through it, her shoulders jammed. When she withdrew, she saw the coiled danger rising to attack her. "You cannot return by the way you entered." She reversed direction, forcing the passage feet first. It yielded to her a little like a living membrane, but her shoulders snagged again. "Your body will rest in the womb of the mother." A tremendous force seized her by the ankles and dragged her back and down. She was flying backward. Something clapped her forehead with the force of a bear's paw, and she dropped her body. She flowed toward the mother. She saw her as vast and beautiful and fertile, with the face of all women and the colors of all races. She opened to Island Woman, and the girl flew through the dream gate without hesitation, without reflection. She flew through the womb of the mother into other worlds. She walked on the face of the moon and spoke with the spirits who live there, those who help the living and those who interfere with them. She flew beyond the stars. Beyond the wolf star, she found a place of light that was inconceivably small and unimaginably dense and powerful. The stars and the planets, everything that composed the universe, seemed to emanate from it, rippling from this single source. She saw it as a seed, then as an egg. She was told by a voice as deep as a mountain, "You are born of earth and sky, but your spirit comes from this star. In your spirit you are neither man nor woman, but in your body you are woman, and you must teach and practice what belongs to women. Women are the life-givers, women are the healers. Women do not need to shed blood to gain power as men do in their darkness. Women return their blood to the mother with the moon flux. This is part of your power. It is why you are feared by men who place walls and taboos around you and kill in the effort to steal the power that is yours alone. You will remember this and live it. You will be an Arondiwano, a woman of power. You will use this power to heal, to release and rescue souls, and to remind your people of who they are." So what can we learn from Island Woman's dream journey of initiation? About our own journeys of exploration, passage and initiation in life and in dreaming between the worlds. The way up is the way down, the way forward is the way back. It's difficult for three-dimensional creatures to comprehend larger dimensions of possibility, but through the dream gates we can go where Island Woman went and where other dream voyagers have gone, and bring back a larger and more generous definition of reality into this one.